Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, Grant Napier. Sean Salisbury, boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. There's never a dull moment in the SEC. How the hell are you, partner?
I'm good. I wish I was an eight, you know, what are they, eight-figure, is that right? 10 million plus is like eight figures, right? And when it comes to millions.
Yeah.
First of all, how sensitive, I don't give a shit whose side you sit on, because it isn't just those two. It's a whole bunch of them, but talk about telling your players don't listen to the shit anybody says about you. Stand tough. Don't respond in adversity. Just ignore all the outliers and all the noise. And these fucking guys react to every single. And I love them both. Don't misunderstand me. I think they're both. They have produced great players. Nick's the best college coach of all time, and Nick's dumb like a fox.
Right.
He's doing this shit, and we'll get into it, but he's out in front of it on purpose. He's the most powerful guy in college football. He knows by doing this, just like when they were playing fast offenses, hey, you got to let me substitute all the things. Nick knows that 10 years from now, he doesn't want that damn gap to close, or 5 years from now. So he's putting it out there to make sure he still keeps the distance, because Alabama alum, no offense, there's a great alumni, but I'm talking about the pool is an ocean for places like Texas and USC in the name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love it. Hey, don't respond to guys who are critical of you. And these two are fighting back and forth and volleying, and they're former buddies.
I know. They used to coach. Let me set the table. I'm sure everyone knows, but I'm going to set the table. All right, so last night, these are the comments from Nick Saban. Quote, "I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, likeness. We didn't buy one player, all right? But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future, because more and more people are doing it. It's tough. Then today, all right, Jimbo Fisher said this at a press conference, quote, "Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out a lot of things you don't want to know. We build him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. It's despicable." And he added, "It's despicable that a reputable head coach can come out and say this when he doesn't get his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. It's ridiculous when he's not on top." And those were just some of the comments from Fisher. I mean, he went on and on. It was pretty amazing to listen to him today.
You know what's interesting too, Grant, and as a guy who was like a pupil to, you know, Jimbo was one of Nick's guys. I know this because I've talked to Nick Saban assistants. He's tough on their ass, and that's but when I hear that from Jimbo, and I'm like I said, hell, I actually, for us, it's great fodder. We get two of the best coaches on the planet, highest paid coaches, guys who get it, volleying back and forth. Hell, it's college football season 3 months from now. We're already getting the best of the best now. Are you kidding me? Hell, it's pushing on June, the dog days of baseball. We got NFL. Hell yes, I love this. But, and he all, you know, talking about assistants and talk to him. We now Nick crossed it yesterday when he said they bought them all. He put an umbrella over it all and said, "I'm sure with name, image, and likeness, it appears to me that they spent a lot of money on players." He could have. But he put the old umbrella over all of it, right? The blanket statement. Well, then Jimbo fires back. See, now it's no longer gamesmanship. It's now personal.
Yes.
They went from the things that we always say. I can criticize you, Grant, that I think it was that I disagree with you on a player or the way they played. but I ain't talking about your personal life, about a kid, or you know what I'm saying? Just don't do it. And now they've done what they would tell their players not to do. They're taking, they're low blowing, taking cheap shots at each other, which yep. Now you got to go in front of your kids. And I know the kids will say, yeah, that's my coach Jimbo, because he also made the comments. He's going after kids, 17 year old kids is how Jimbo phrased it for Nick. And Nick putting it on the kids and doing it all. But they're both, listen, both of their staffs and their, I mean, their players are going to rally around them. We know that. They should be doing that anyway. But what it is, that now we're getting to the point, what Jimbo did in response to that, and I understand, I don't like the rabbit ears of both of them. I think it's kind of pussified, but I do like the battle. I like somebody who punches back, but you're going to preach to your team and stuff, hey, don't get rabbit-eared. And yet now these two guys that were friends and all that, and we know how hard Saban is on coaches, but now we've gone from, hey, look deep into his past and look at that, and look at them. Basically, without saying the word cheating, he was insinuating, even though name, image, and likeness, the rules say, pay whatever the fuck you want to pay. Yeah. The rules are in place. So no matter which side you're on, the truth of the matter is both want to defend their programs, and I get it. And Nick's genius like this. Why? Mm-hmm. He's out in front of it. You heard him say, I don't know if we can keep up. He's speaking to his alumni. Yep. He's also speaking, saying, I want to make sure that advantage doesn't get closed because I got it in recruiting because I'm the best recruiter in the world when it doesn't. I got Alabama. I don't have to offer money yet, even though we know it's anybody who says they've never given a hand to cheated some way, given a hat. Yeah. Somewhere along the line, everybody we've run into, even whether they know it or not, has probably broken NC2A rule. But this has now become personal, and it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop because now pressure raises for Jimbo as well. Why?
Yeah, you better fucking win.
Yep.
That's right.
And I put that on Twitter, and I said it on my show this morning, that while all this is fine and dandy, now what happens is the pressure on you, because rich men and millionaires, they don't like giving away money if it doesn't work.
That's right.
They want return on their investment.
That's
so
right.
Now, even though you're making 30 million, whatever Jimbo's making,
right
now they're looking and saying, okay, you've won name. If you win name, image, and likeness, and you're a Power 5 team, you sure as shit better win Saturdays. And I'm talking to everybody involved. Nick's already got that trump card because he's won on Saturdays. He's trying to keep that advantage with name, image, likeness. We do need to fix it some, but I'm all for the kids. But there's a slippery slope. Great for the kid, bad for college football, right? So this is a battle that ain't going away. And it seems to me like from a distance, a friendship's ruined. And if they were just doing this for hot take made for TV, it worked. But this is deeper. You could see the emotion in Jimbo responding. He called a press conference just to go after Saban. Not to in general. So when it becomes personal, Grant, the digging starts. Now the question is, are you afraid of either one of these coaches? You're immediately, you're like, I ain't digging onto this because I'll never be welcome back in the building because they'll hold grudges.
Yeah.
It's a battle royal, man.
And I'll take one thing. The fucking game in October in Tuscaloosa, that's going to be the toughest ticket of the year to get in college football. And you got to remember, A&M beat Alabama, all right, at College Station last year. Yeah. Now it's in Tuscaloosa, and then on top of this, can you imagine the buildup that week for that game? Oh, it's already started. It's fucking May, and it's already started.
Yeah, guess where College Game Day is going to be, and we haven't even scheduled that one yet. Okay, we already know that, right? It's going to be a friggin' monster, and we're going to do everything we can to get the fodder leading into it. And listen, one thing we know about – now, Jimbo is an emotional cat, right? He responds, I love him for it. The other side, we know this. Nick – he's been accused of being a whiner, but he also, listen, he doesn't give a shit if you call him a whiner. He's doing this. Nick knows exactly what he's doing, and he always has. So, but with this, getting out in front of it, I can tell you one thing. You know what that button he's got in his office where the old doors open and close behind you? If you don't think he's working his plan how to go next, you're out of your fucking mind because Jimbo ain't getting the last word in. At least in Nick's mind, right?
Yeah.
It's I hate the fact that it gets personal. I know everybody loves it. I do, because I don't think it's good for anybody when you start crossing those lines. Right. And, you know, what's next? We're going to start talking about marriages and stuff. Yep. You don't want to do that. But I do like the gamesmanship of, oh, really?
Yep.
Jimbo's been called out.
Okay.
Jimbo called him out and say, we're doing it the right way. And the name, image, and likeness in defense of Jimbo is in place, and you're allowed to do it.
Yes. All right. I want to ask you right here. I'm going to ask you right now. May 19th, in October, at Tuscaloosa, when that final gun goes off and the game is over, Do you think those coaches are going to walk towards each other, or are they going right into their respective locker rooms?
If they walk towards each other, now, depending on what goes, and I'm not trying to say, depending, if you said, if it was the way I feel today about it now, they wouldn't say anything. And if they did, it'd be harsh words to each other and each other. If they did come up, they'd make sure that the other guy knew, basically, fuck you, right? Right. That's how it would be. But they're both camera conscious.
Right.
They know, right? They know that. Oh, but if tomorrow was the game, they wouldn't. And if you tried to make them shake a hand, it wouldn't happen. Or it'd be one
the winning coach will go out to the midfield. The winning coach will
rub it in. Oh, right. Well, yes, he will. And as much as I like Texas A&M and what they've done, the better quarterback right now resides in Tuscaloosa.
With Young,
so you'd have to say advantage Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah,
Bryce
I
Young,
would imagine.
Yeah.
And you know what? Don't think even if the game's late. I mean, like it's a 4-hour game. Guess what? The TV crew ain't doing cutting away from the handshake.
Oh no!
Primetime TV, you're gonna have to wait. Okay, we're waiting to see what those two cats do. And depending on what happens between now and then, Grant, if there's bigger buildup, oh, you can bet your sweet ass that those two, it's not going to be pleasantries that I'll see at Thanksgiving. It's going to be, and they're going to recruit against each other and. This guy and this guy, here's how we do it. We do it right. No, we do it right. And they're both dumb like foxes. They get it. They understand.
All right. You played in a completely different era as a college athlete at USC. So in the last couple of years, things have changed. Let's talk about name, image, likeness. I'm going to put you in charge of college sports. You can, whatever Sean Salisbury says goes. Do you like that? Would you do something different? Tell me about the big picture without spending 5 hours. What would you do? Do you like this? Do you like the way it is right now, Sean?
No. I like the guys are getting paid. We have the right idea, but the idea is out of control. It got off the tracks, right? It went from, okay, we're going. And we hit the bullet train, man. We went from nothing to 160 miles an hour in seconds with name, image, and likeness. It's out of control because what we're doing now, look how they had to change the scholarships overnight.
Yeah.
That it used to be you can only get 25 a year. Now, because the transfer portal, if you only have 50 because 20 guys transfer, you can offer 35 scholarships, just like back in the day when USC would go recruit the top 6 running backs and get 4 of them, right? 85 scholarship limit. But if you got 40 available to get to 85, recruit them all. And I assure you, some will say, well, we may not want to take a transfer. Why, Grant? Because in the next recruiting class, we're just going to grab 3 more 5-stars. You get what I'm saying? So it could actually have a reverse effect with the scholarship. But I would, Grant, I don't know what the full regulations are, though. And Dan Patrick and I discussed this. We probably need a union, a salary cap on name, image, and likeness. But there has to be some kind of we got to put a wall up so the snowball doesn't kill college football because the good teams already have an advantage. What's it going to be like when the top 10 teams who got money, the other 110, we got no shot. And we're going to form a Power 5. That's NC2A is going away eventually.
Yeah. If we went back and had with a transfer portal where the athlete had to sit out a year.
Like I had to when if I was going to transfer back when I played. I didn't.
I understand.
You had to sit out a year.
I understand. Right. Do we need to go back to that? Would that help some way?
I think we've got to cut off at the point in time, Grant. If we've awarded the kids now, okay, we recognize you do a lot and deserve to get paid some way. I'm not sure I like the schools being able, and I don't know how you do it, the schools where they get to control name, image, and likeness. I'd like it to be where the inside house, and it's probably impossible to do, where these companies that are offering name, image, and likeness, that they're offering it away from the program knowing about it. And some programs will tell you they don't know, and that's bullshit, as we all know, right?
Right.
Because players are going to drive new cars, and they're going to let you know.
Sure.
But, Grant, I would like to get to the point where we can't – the idea is right, but we have to have some kind of control because with the transfer portal, I think that we've got to do something where we finally say, okay, the class of 2026, whatever it is, right? Like we do everything else. We got the 4, now we're going to eventually go – we're going to expand at some point. The class of 2026 is the last free transfer we get. So kids get to prepare for it, right? And if you have one, you can't have a second one unless it's an injury or a hardship. But I would do that. We can't for the next 30 years. It's become free agency in professional sports. So if that's the case, then we're going to have to put a salary cap. Are we going to get to the point where, Grant, you and I are coaching at Alabama or at Southern Cal, and we want to, well, this five-star's not that good. Let's call up Florida State, who's missing a right tackle, and say, you want to trade?
Right.
Are we getting to the legal part where we can, if we're going to pay you, then I could, or do I get to the point where we tried to get back when we offered a scholarship, it was 4 years, not one, where I can look at, and I know they do it already, guys will after a year say, no, we're taking you off scholarship, where you can look and say, like a roster, nah, buddy, you're not living up to the thing. I'll either trade you or you're done. You're done. You want to pay? I don't know, but we've got to eventually, we can't forever let one and done, you can't come and transfer the portal till 2070, right? With name, image, and likeness. So if you give something, you got to give up something. I don't know what the answer is, but I know this. The idea is right, but it is out of control, and it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse before it gets better because of the money. And then we're going to hit a ceiling, and it'll even out.
All right. You went to a top-notch powerhouse football program, and you ended up playing in college with guys that are now in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Right.
So I want to ask you, there are some players that do go to class and want an education, all right? They do exist, okay? You're one of them. You're actually back in school right now. And, I mean, I give you all
my master's from Texas A&M, right?
How about that?
There you go, right.
How about that? So my question is, out of the top 60 players on a college football team, when you were at USC, did every player that walked onto that field for the first day of practice, did they all feel that they were going to be playing pro football? Or are there players that know when they go to college that this is it, that they're not going to be good enough to go to the next level? And, I mean, I always go, call me old-fashioned, but the last time I checked, colleges and universities still are about getting an education like you did and so many others. So do we just throw that out the window, Sean? Because I don't like that.
It's going to be, I'm just, as we're going through it now, when parents are sitting in coaches' living rooms, I'm not saying everybody, but the great majority of them, people are now, well, wherever you go, you'll get whatever you put in, you'll get out of it, right? The questions are being asked is, am I playing on national TV? Am I going to be playing in the NFL? Am I going to start right away? And can I, win a Heisman Trophy? And what's my name, image, and likeness? They're not, for the most part, they're not bringing up, okay, do I have a counselor and a tutor my freshman year? Now, that may come, it's like, what traits do you want in a quarterback? Arm strength is 7. I want accuracy, all that. Now, name, image, and likeness 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, wasn't even brought up. Now, one of the questions, I've talked to a couple coaches, that name, image, and likeness is being brought up in the conversation of what can you offer me? And so, yes, and you're right, Grant. It's not really, now not for all, but student-athlete is a complete miss. It's full of shit the way we label it now, because it's athlete-student for the most part. And yet the crazy thing about it is, go across the top, all the Division I schools in the country, the percentage of guys that are going to play on Sunday is slim, very slim.
Of course, that's why I'm asking.
When you're in it, you're going to be out of it. So here's part of mine. You're going to get a bunch of five-star recruits that get paid $250,000 bucks or $1 million bucks. They come out of high school and go to one of these power schools. He's going to get beat out by a three-star. The guy who gave him name, image, and likeness, a businessman, is going to be pissed because he wants to know if he's getting return on his investment.
Right.
That guy's never going to start, or he's going to just kind of flounder around and transfer once, and then be out there and not play. And then he's never make an NFL team. And when he thought he was going to make an NFL team, so he's going to make more money from name, image, and likeness, some of these guys, than they'll ever sniff in the NFL, because some are never going to get a shot. Now,
correct,
the best of the best are. So, Grant, when I walked on the field at SC, or when I was getting recruited, I knew I was going to be a pro. Yet, I mean, that's what you tell yourself. It's SC.
I understand.
And then the first day of practice, when you see him run around, you say, I got to find out just Chip Banks and Browner and Marcus Allen and Bruce Matthews. You're like, okay, I know I'm a good player, but shit. He's, the hardest practice, spring practice was like, Saturdays are going to be a lot easier than this. That's what you thought. And I'm sure it goes on at Alabama now too.
Right.
But yes, most of the guys I know, now I have some great teammates who went in there, were hellified football players. but class was a priority. Whether one of my buddies, right, who was our starting middle linebacker as a freshman, veterinarian, he's a vet to this day. And while he was a fun loving beer drinking, he never missed studying and he never missed class, and he knew it yet. And he hurt his neck, so he didn't get a chance to play in the NFL, but he started at Southern Cal at middle linebacker as a freshman.
Wow.
So, you know, but he knew what he knew that if it was going to end, the smart ones want to play it and believe they can because SC recruited him.
Sure.
But they also know some after 2 years are like, oof, I may not see the field. And then some are, I'm seeing the field, I'm going to play, but how long is it going to last? And then Marcus Allen's there and he's going to play forever and be the best of the best. Right. So I think most guys that get recruited by those type of schools either dream it or when they walk on there, they say, I know I'm going to play it. So get the money while you can if they're going to let the rule be name, image, and likeness. But, Grant, think about where it's headed. And it will get to the point where we keep offering, and then they'll start to see return on investment. I mean, are you going to buy a phone because a 17-year-old's endorsing it? Probably not, right?
I'm not.
So what's the return? The bottom line is that the return is put a ring on the finger, and if the rings don't happen, then the coach gets fired because they ain't going to keep giving money. And the president and the AD are saying, I'm getting a lot of complaints from our top 10 alumni. We either got to win. We spent $40 million on the last two class, whatever it is. I'm talking about any school.
So yeah, I understand.
Most guys go thinking, yes, I'm a pro, but the smart ones think, yes, I'm going to the pros, but I ain't leaving here without that piece of paper.
Yeah.
Because I know that I can't play long. Even if I do, I'm going to be in my 30s.
Yeah.
If you're lucky. So most do, but you know, the guy who gets recruited by a mid-level school may not. He may just say it's a means to an end. I'm here on a free scholarship. I know what I want to do. I'm going to milk every ounce of great football, and if I play, great. But when you get recruited by Alabama, you're going there for academics, I'm sure. But you know you got to. You think that when you go there, you're going to be starting and playing in a big game and national championship and being an NFL Sunday player.
Yeah, it's a little different than being recruited to go to Stanford. I understand. All right, let's talk NBA. Are we going to see any good games in the West? I mean, this is unfucking believable to me. I mean, the Phoenix series against Dallas went 7 games, but there were no good games. We saw what happened last night. I mean, it was no contest. I do believe Dallas will play a lot better in game two, but I didn't think they were going to win this series. I did think it would go 6 games, and I'm not discounting that. I mean, Dallas looked really bad in games one and two against Phoenix, but, you know, in the East, we had a lopsided game one when the fourth quarter started. I think it could be different tonight because Al Horford is going to play and Marcus Smart is going to play. So, you know, you just it just blows my mind that people that break down these games and want to gloss over the fact that Boston was without two starters, you know, like, this game tonight should be really close. And I think Boston's going to win the game tonight. But if this game's a blowout tonight, Sean, I'm going to be like, Jesus, really?
Yeah. It sure as hell ain't the Stanley Cup playoffs, is it?
We're seven games.
I mean,
yeah.
You want competitive shit?
It's the best.
That's the place. I still think it's the best postseason in all.
It is. It's the best.
That's just me, but I know you're a hockey fan, and so
love it.
I'll take the Stanley Cup playoffs over any postseason.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
All day, every day.
In a heartbeat.
And Grant, you're an expert in the NBA stuff, and you're passionate, and you know it. Well, you had said, don't count out Dallas against the Suns, right? Was it Dallas?
Right.
Dallas against the Suns. And we talked about the Boston-Milwaukee series. Mm-hmm. And you legitimately gave them both, and both of them moved on. And I had the Suns, and I thought Boston could take care of their business. I mean, I thought Milwaukee could take care of their business on the road. And I sure as hell didn't expect either one of them to urinate down their leg. And they're, you know, one on the road and one at home. And the Suns, I mean, it was embarrassing, right? But
it's awful.
You make a hell of a point. And we do. It's like, I don't want to hear Boston make the excuse. If you weren't without, if you didn't have Marcus Smart and Horford at all, who cares? It wouldn't have mattered. Well, of course it would have mattered.
Yeah, two starters.
A great defensive player. And Horford's out of his mind. I mean, Horford's really good when he plays in Boston. He's a pretty good player there, right? And you got stars, and Tatum will do his. But Jimmy Butler has been as good as anybody in the postseason this whole
time. It's been amazing.
He has, and he's a dog, man. And he is on you on both ends of the floor, and he demands elevation from his teammates. But, yeah, it's been – now, it's fun to watch great players do their thing like Luka does on his thing and watching what Jimmy's doing, but I – and Steph and the rest of them. But it is pedestrian. I don't think there's a great team. I don't.
There isn't.
I mean, good team. I don't – when I look at Golden State, I say good team, but it's not a team I say if they stub their toe or one guy gets hurt, they're beatable. We know Dallas is beatable, and they're really good. They got a star. But Boston's good. I mean, they're all good. Don't misunderstand me. But I don't look at any of these teams and say, overwhelming,
No.
The Golden State Warriors are clear-cut, no questions asked, the NBA champion. If I was picking a team right now, the Miami Heat are playing or dominating. Yep. The Miami Heat are the best team of the four right now, I think.
You know how you answer that question? It's very simple. Normally, in the NBA, when you get to the conference finals, you already know what the finals are going to be.
Yep.
Okay? This year, when you get to the conference finals, you can go with any combination and you wouldn't bat an eye. If somebody told you it's going to be Dallas and Miami, you'd be like, okay, I could see that. Somebody said it's going to be Boston and Dallas. Yes. If they said Miami, Golden State, the reality is that these four teams, there's really not a lot that separates them. Personally, I would put Dallas fourth on the list among these teams. But with that said, because they have Luka and we saw what he did in game seven on the road in Phoenix, it wouldn't shock me if Dallas ends up beating Golden State.
There's no sport more of the four major ones where one superstar controls the game more than any other sport. Even the quarterbacks, your quarterback, Josh Allen, could be playing out of his friggin' mind.
Yep.
And then the other quarterback can too, and your defense can't get a stop, and you lose. And you played well enough to win 1,000 games in a row until you ran into Mahomes in Kansas City. In the NBA, yeah, of course you need support, but if Luka goes and Jimmy hangs 41 on you, you guess what? You can win those games. If Luka goes out and gives me a triple-double, and Steph shoots good but not great, Dallas will win the game. So you are exactly right. And the truth is, no matter what of those combos that you just pointed out, if when they get to the finals, it's a pick 'em.
Yep.
You say, if they both play good basketball, I'll see you in seven, and whoever's shooting the best and gets a couple stops is going to win. Because they all got that one guy, Butler and Tatum, and Steph and Luka. Then is it going to be Brunson, Clay?
Yep.
Is it going to be Jaylen Brown? Is it going to, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Who's Chris Middleton? I mean, we know who the names are, but who steps up and knocks down a few shots? Or is it Hero? Who's the guy? Because I know the four studs, and then we'll go from there. But you're right. I wouldn't bet right now if I gamble it for anything right now over who was going to win, because they're all good, but I don't think we have a, oh my gosh, great team in the Final Four.
And the team that is the healthiest when the finals begin might be the team that I pick. So we'll wait after this round.
Great call.
All right, so I want to ask you, I want to talk a little NBA off this series because we had the NBA draft lottery. You're in Houston. The Rockets, worst record in the league, they get the third pick. Do you feel that they would take, if Holmgren is available, knowing that they're still a couple of years away and he might be the guy, but you look at his frame, Sean, the guy's 7 feet, 190, 195. He's not going to be really able to help you for 3 years, right? But we could look back at this draft and we could say he's the best player that was in the draft class of 2022, but you are going to have to wait. Put me in the mind of the Rockets, one of these teams that's not there yet and they're not really close to being there. So what is their plan?
Hey, folks, let's face it. After a night with drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. I've got to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is until I found ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. And hey, I'm not going to lie, I'll be honest with you. I was a little on the fence about ZBiotics initially, but then just recently, I was at my buddy's 60th birthday party. They had rented out a restaurant for the entire night, so I gave it a shot. Let me tell you something. It's the real deal. Vacations, weddings, birthdays, reunions. Hey, there's a lot going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now. Go to ZBiotics.com/Grant to get 15% off your first order when you use Grant at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee. So, hey, if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, head to ZBiotics.com/Grant. Use the code GRANT at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we remember, and you watched Jalen Green, the second pick last year,
yes,
the last month of the season, play like a grown-ass man in a franchise.
Yes, he did.
And he got player of the month, right? So that's they love that going into the offseason. And young, and they got assets out the ass, right? Draft. It's like them in Oklahoma City are going to have like 47 picks in the next till 2060, right?
Yeah, it's only good if you take the right guys, though.
Bingo. And they got they had the 17th pick. And sometimes the 17th pick turns into an all-star, right?
Yes.
You never know. So maximize it, or do you take that and another asset and try to move it around? Listen, Rafael Stone, the GM, and they got their work cut out for them, but they got some good young players. And you're right, Grant. They're probably not even a play-in type game next year, but two years from now, they should be – by then you would expect them to. So the draft here – now, one thing, there's been one thought, train of thought that, well, they got the third pick. Now you take the pressure off because somebody else can take the higher risk, which is Holmgren, obviously, right? You're like, okay, if it's not Jabari and it's not Banchero, well, it's one of those three, you think, because we think it's three men and there's a small gap. And then Ivy from Purdue and the Iowa and Murray from Iowa start to jump into the fray. But somebody may fall in love with one of those two. But you think it's the three. So you're like, at three, I got two choices. I'm going to sit here and one of those is going to fall in my lap and I'm just going to take the guy who's left. Or I'm going to say, well, if it's the high risk and do I trade down and get more that somebody comes up and craves Holmgren, right? So you're really sitting in a good position, but the best position is always to sit in the one hole, right? If you're Orlando and then who's it?
Oklahoma and answer your phone.
Right. And every time it calls. And even if you always answer it because you never know when somebody's going to get stupid, right? And offer it. But I will tell you this real quick, Grant, with Holmgren.
Yeah.
3 years from now, we could be looking at a monster because he is athletic.
No question.
He runs the floor. He could put the ball on the deck. He's a great rim protector. He's 190 pounds, which if he was 220, we wouldn't have a conversation. Even 220.
Number one.
And we've kind of gone back to the big man. Think about the three finalists for MVP. The big man's rearing his head again, right? Mm-hmm. And the depth of the big man.
Great point.
We've also changed the game. We've also changed the game a little bit. Now, Holmgren, when Bob Lanier, I could go through a bunch of different eras, would have stayed there and said, dude, we'll see you in the second round. Because these big fellas, Wes Unseld's are going to. Then you go to the next ones of with Wilt, then Abdul-Jabbar, Lew Alcindor.
Yeah.
And then we get to Hakeem and that group, and then Shaq's, and we start moving on, and they're still big and physical, and even a Rick Mahorn's are going to beat your brains in, right? And now, though, we've got to the point where these dudes are popping out to the three and knocking them down, right?
Exactly.
You're bringing that big fella who's a rim protector, you bring him out. So that'll be an advantage for Holmgren, but eventually you're going to have to get to the bucket and defend a guy who plays with his back to the basket in the low block. How are you going to deal with Jokic when he's throwing elbows into your throat and kissing off the glass? So, but the risk is the highest of the three. The reward is through the roof because he's got the highest ceiling. But the safest seems like Banchero, but the intriguing one is Jabari Smith because he can he can do it all. So the talk here is most people don't want Holmgren, and it's only for one reason, Grant. One is, and then there's a half a reason. One is it just the optics say it's like the small quarterback. Don't touch him. But if you get him and he's lights out, you say, oh, gosh, what a great choice. And the other part is people still frown on the Gonzaga thing. They schedule all year long. And then when they run into somebody who's playing a monster schedule, they disappear a little bit. He wasn't the number one guy. Timmy was. I like the kid. I wish he was 230 because it'd be a no-brainer. But that frame, Grant, you're right. It is questionable. But if you get him and he hits,
his
skill set is through the roof.
I know. It's through the roof.
Yeah.
Hey, so we talk about draft picks. Here's an interesting stat for you. The four teams that are currently still alive in the NBA, Boston, Miami, Dallas, and Golden State. There's not a first or second pick from previous drafts on any of their rosters. So, you know, we always think about the first overall pick, the second. Yeah, it's great if LeBron James is in the draft. It's great if, you know, Tim Duncan's coming out of Wake Forest and, you know, wow, okay, he's going to change your team overnight. Those drafts don't happen very often. And there are so many mistakes that are made at the top of the draft. I was talking about this on a show that I do on a Listen app yesterday. I went back to the De'Aaron Fox draft. So Boston made the trade with Philadelphia, okay? Philadelphia takes Markelle Fultz at number one. The Lakers take Lonzo Ball at two. Jason Tatum ends up in Boston, who's now a superstar. Oh, and by the way, they got a first-round pick. Phoenix takes Josh Jackson at number four, who was a bust, okay? And De'Aaron Fox is good. Sometimes he's very good, but he's not above that because he can't shoot. And everyone thought that would be just an amazing draft. And now you look back on it 5 years later and you're like, holy shit, look at all the mistakes that were made in the top five picks.
Poor Fultz couldn't – he had the yips galore, right?
Yeah, that's right.
He couldn't do it. And at Washington, everybody said, can't miss, man. Dude, can't miss. And I actually feel bad for the cycle. I mean, unfortunately for him in Philly, and then Ben Simmons, who doesn't want – I mean, good gracious, man. Those the non-physical part of it, the psychological that's hit that franchise. And you mentioned and I will – not to brag or pat me on the back, my favorite player coming out that year. And I said it. I said, I'm going to tell you right now, because I love the way he could play away from the basket and slash. I said it on my show, Tatum. Now, go back. I might have taken Fultz. That, you know, if we did a do-over. I was just – I'd seen Tatum the most, right? And I
–
because you're not watching Washington on the West Coast, or if you're on the East Coast, because they're playing at midnight, right? But I'd seen him, but I'd watched Tatum. I probably saw him, Grant, that year 25 times. But I just loved everything about him. And I didn't even think he was going to be – and then he came out as a rookie really good. I didn't know he's even better than advertised, because I think he's a really good player. But we miss on a lot of them too. That's the one where I'll say, I love Jason Tatum, but we don't ever check receipts. But I'll check, because there's been other guys I've loved that I'm like, but Lonzo, like you said, different team. Fultz, and now we got Tatum, who's got a chance to win the whole thing. But that is I had no idea about that stat. It is crazy.
And
it's not very often you get the Elijah Wans and Jordans hanging around. It's like the quarterback. We always judge everybody by Mahomes, but there's more guys like me than there were the Mahomes, right? That are fighting their ass off and don't make it, right?
Hey, can I get a copy of your morning show earlier this week, the morning after Eovaldi gave up five home runs in the second inning? Could I come back and listen to that show by any chance?
I'm allowed to do that. See, Charles could do that on TNT with the big F-ball. My guy, right? Who gave out my classic. The only guy in the world, maybe not even just sports. And you know what? And we all love it and say, that's Chuck being Chuck. And we love it. I will tell you this, dude. Kiss my lily ass right now, okay, about Nathan Eovaldi.
Right.
You want me to come back and talk about Pavetta, what he did the next night? Two-hitter. If complete game, 112 pitches last night. I can't say that too loud because Astros fans get pissed because I say, when the Astros lose, as long as it's to the Red Sox, you got to let me brag about the shit, right?
Right.
But, hey, Grant, I'm turning – because I get the extra innings package. You know how much I love this base. I'll probably watch 140 Sox games a year unless they're out of it in June and your Yankees to run away. So I don't
have to or May.
Yeah, but middle finger. I watch it and I'm thinking, did Eovaldi just decide? He doesn't like the ad. Now, he's a Texas guy. He doesn't like him of what happened. He doesn't hold him in the highest regard because he says they rub you the wrong way. Well, they rub that baseball the wrong way too, because he's a really good pitcher.
Great pitcher.
It was batting practice, man. When I'm saying, and I go back, I said, am I watching highlights of this shit or is it a different dude? And Siri hits the one 350 some feet to the warning track. That almost went in the bullpen for a sixth home run.
Right.
I doubt we'll see Eovaldi do that again, because you take away the three guys.
He's too good.
Lineup.
He's too good.
Exactly. But everybody has one of those. Well, maybe not five home runs in an inning where it's like, dude, nothing was moving. Go ahead. You get the whole year to brag about your Yankees. A whole year and rip the Sox. And enjoy it. When's the last time you guys won a World Series? I'm just curious.
Been a while.
How long? Can you give me maybe with 07, somewhere around there or something like that? Maybe
2009, I believe.
Say it again.
I think it was 2009.
Nine? Okay. Give or take a year. Okay. Yeah. 2009. I know. And then you go back to, well, Sean, have you seen all the rafters with all the and you win this argument. You win. But screw you. And at the point in time, I'm just like, Maybe the Astros can hit 14 home runs. We'll just have a really good night and stay up till 2 in the morning. So I know when we suck, and that wasn't a good Evaldi performance, and I think he's a hell of a pitcher, but that's a humble pie right there, man. It was batting practice.
You know, we always talk about those, because Nathan Evaldi is a hell of a pitcher. I mean, the guys in a big game, big game, and I know this is Yankees fan, in a big game, I don't want to see him on the mound pitch, because you know what? The Yankees aren't going to win.
Right.
Okay.
He's got balls that hang down to his ankles. That's right. You ain't lying.
He's a big game pitcher. But we always talk about the athletes and pick on their really bad games. But we all have them. I'm sure you look back at your career, whether it was at USC or the NFL, where you still have like, shit, I wish I could go back and play that game over again. That probably still bugs the shit out of you, even at this point in your life.
Cringe. I don't remember many of the good ones. Now, I had the good ones. You think, oh, you were NFL player of the week, which I was. But it's like people bring that up. It's like, yeah, fine. Just like we always say, you never enjoy the wins as much as you cringe and suffer the losses. Do I think about it? Here's the problem, though. I had more than one of those. So Evaldi, they only have one a year where it's like that. I had one of those. But the one that sticks out in my NFL, and it was Grant, you do have those where if the guy's standing 8 feet in front of you, you'd miss him by 4 feet, right? That feeling right. with the yanking bus, like you're not even when you're uptight, you're just free flowing. You say, what the hell is going on here? It's like a golfer. You're like, oh, I'm going on the range. All of a sudden, you're hitting balls into the ground. You're like, I shot 75 yesterday. I can't get it off the tee. Dan Patrick and I did that. We were playing in Vegas, and we're out at golf, and we went out and had a little bit of fun, laughs the night before, had a beer or two. We go out on the driving range. I'm telling you, we are sitting side by side. And 30 swings in on the range, we're both staring at you. You'd have thought I never played. And I'm not a scratch golfer. I'm an okay player. But good enough for – now on the range, I'm a practice range All-American. Dude, you'd think I was on the tour, moving balls the way I want, first tee box, snap hook, you know, that shit. Miss four putting on the first green. But I'm literally thinking there, I can't do this. I couldn't on a tee – hitting warm burners, and I'm thinking, and Dan's doing it too, and Dan's a better player than I am. We're like looking at each other like, is this the time when you get those yips where you like put the clubs away for a year? That's what I was thinking. Now Dan went out and we played better on the course. Normally it's opposite for me, but I'm playing against Seattle in Seattle, and it didn't matter where I threw it. It went to the other dude. Interception, one. Second one, two. The whole game, and we're throwing because we're behind because I'm throwing an interception. Third one, and then they decide to rub it in and take the third or fourth one, 70 yards for whatever it was for an interception for a touchdown. And you walk off there and say, I didn't do anything different. I knew exactly what they were doing, but I couldn't throw it to my guy. I threw it to them for four picks. Yeah. Yeah, you remember him. I go all the way back to high school. Me and the center, you know, I'll take blame because I'm the quarterback. It's my job. But we're going down to win a game against a rival, and we muffed the center snap like at the 3 yard line. Lay it on the ground, they recover, and we lose. And that's still, it's still to this day, it was against either Mount Carmel, which is Billy Beane's high school, or Poway, which is their rival. But I laid the ball on the ground, and I think it was Poway, and it hit my hand, it dropped. I couldn't recover it, kicked around, somebody else recovered. Lost the game inside the 5 yard line. And I can remember everything about that game, and I can't remember when I threw four touchdowns against our rival in high school. It just, they stick out. And Evaldi, remember, but the key is you got to flush it. And then you can relive it 20 years after you're done. Like, I'm still reliving the regrets, but he'll get over it because he's a better player than I was. But, I don't know a guy that hasn't had one of those where it's like, you think, man, you know what? Give me the right-hander. I'm done. I got nothing left for you. And that happens to all of them, man.
I'll tell you, I remember 1979 playing lacrosse at Bowling Green, and we were at Denison. And I had rolled my ankle pretty badly 2 days before. And I had been going to the training room doing the ice – the hot bath, you know, that which, you know, you've done that. That's the most painful freaking thing in the world. Sucks. But anyway, we get to Denison and I shouldn't be playing. I really shouldn't. And my coach has put me on play attack. So my coach has put me out there in certain situations. But then when he had to sub for me, I would have to run all the way off the field, which was the hardest thing to do. As a matter of fact, at halftime, I didn't even go into the locker room. I stayed out on the bench. So anyway, I had two goals and the game is tied with 2 minutes left. And we're coming down on a fast break. I see the middie, and I get my position, and he makes me a perfect pass, and I one-time it. I catch it, boom, and I swear the goalie makes, in all my years of playing lacrosse, from when I was 8 years old until I stopped playing when I was 50 in club lacrosse, the goalie takes his stick and goes like that. The ball was heading right towards the corner of the goal, and I swear it hits the very butt end of the stick, okay? And it was not a goal, and we end up losing by one goal. If I score that goal, we probably win the game. But that shit, that one shot of all of the games I've ever played, I cannot get out of my mind, because had I just caught the ball, look, I didn't even look at the goal. I just caught it, and one time, if I had just caught it half a cradle, I would have had the goalie at my mercy. Right. Could have bounced it, could have gone off stick. But the fact, and I can't get that image out of my mind. You know what I'm talking about. I swear to God, I think about it all the time. That was 1979.
And you remember the two goals far less than the miss that he, and it was a good save. But you're thinking, man, I got him by the balls if I just don't go one timer top shelf that he gets lucky on and does it. So I like it. Short stick guy scoring goals. I like it, my man. I love lacrosse.
Dude, I had eight goals in a game in high school once, if you can believe that. I had eight goals against Herricks High School on Long Island. And then my freshman year, not to brag, my freshman year.
For all that great all that great lacrosse is played, man.
My freshman year at Ohio State, I'll never forget this. We're playing at the Horseshoe after the Ohio State Buckeyes spring game, okay? So I walk out of the locker room. The spring game had ended, obviously, and I walk into the end zone to walk onto the field, and who is standing there in their number 10 Buckeye jersey but Art Schleister, with all these little kids around him signing his autograph. And of course, we know what a horror story Art Schleister, ended up being with gambling and everything after.
Game, by the way. He bet on the lacrosse game. I'm kidding. I said he bet on the lacrosse game, but I'm kidding. Because I love Art. I'm kidding.
Well,
just a joke. Because Art went through some really tough times, man. So I meant that as a joke. I did.
No, I know.
It was a good one. Good time.
I scored five goals that day as a freshman. We get into the locker room after the game, after beating Ohio State. Somebody had broke into the locker room and stolen all of our valuables. I had a watch that my dad gave me for my high school graduation that was stolen. So I get back to the Bowling Green campus and I write a handwritten letter to the athletic director at Ohio State, whose name was Hugh Hinman. And I write, "Mr. Hinman, I'm a freshman on the Bowling Green lacrosse team. Just want to let you know, blah, blah, blah. I think you really need to have a better, blah, 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 blah." I was not rude. I was not a dick. Never got a reply from anyone at the Ohio State Athletic Department. Now, didn't even get a reply. Not even like a formal, "Hey, thank you very much. We're really sorry." Didn't even get a response. How about that for you?
Yeah, well, that sucks. And I'll bet you, and we joke about the Schleister thing, because Art was a great player.
Oh, he was great.
He had college football by the short hairs. He did. He was so
good. Yes, he did.
And I'll bet you, and you knew who he was, I'll bet you.
Sure.
I'll bet you're thinking, "Well, Art Schleser, I'm going to raise my game." Just being there, honestly.
Right. It pumped me up.
Yes, that's my point.
Because you know what? I knew when I walked on, I was little. Sean, I'm 19 years old, and I'm walking by the most famous person that I mean, let's face it. Art Schleser was like a household name in football.
Yes, he was. And I mean, Ohio State, he was beloved, man, Art Schleser. Yeah. And so, what's crazy about that, Grant, is that the memories of things that didn't go the way you want them to. I love the fact you're up there, Johns Hopkins, Long Island, lacrosse. My son was a great baseball player, my middle boy. And it was a left-handed hitting, slick fielding shortstop, but it hit left, and he was really good. And a kind of guy that if he stayed at it, was good enough to probably go on and play, at least, when you're looking at a freshman, right? But baseball started to bore him. Now, he loves baseball, but it bored him to play. And all of a sudden, a couple of his buddies are on lacrosse. Said, "Dad, I want to try this." So, and he's aggressive and physical, and became a long stick defenseman and was all league and had and loved
That's
it.
Great.
Didn't want to play, but I'm like, "Oh man, you're going to give up baseball." And then I go to watch lacrosse because I didn't know all the rules.
Right? Yeah, it's a great
I just
game.
Love how fast! But I'm going to tell you something. I didn't miss a game. It didn't matter. Matter of fact, they went to Vail, Colorado. I said, "Hop in, brother. We're driving and staying a week." And went to a tournament there. I wasn't missing shit because it's a great sport. So I love that, but you do, Grant. You're right. You remember, and it sucks. It sucks.
Yeah.
But when it's all said and done, unfortunately, you can't flush those out. Or at least I can't. Still to this day, it still bothers me to this day.
I'll wrap up the show this way. One of my great memories.
Question for you when you're done.
One of my great memories. We played at Notre Dame in their football stadium, and we dressed in the locker room that you dressed in at USC, and I just was visualizing what it would be like on a Saturday that you experienced, and I think the best college football rivalry that there is, and the games that you had, going down the stairs, walking out into the tunnel. And I, you know, again, the stadium's empty. We're playing lacrosse. Nobody's there. There's 100 people, 100 people. But I was visualizing as I'm coming out of that tunnel what that must be like for a visitor like yourself. I talk to Mike Lamb about this all the time, our good buddy. And Mike was talking about, you know, the fans at Notre Dame are right on your ass on the bench. They're right there. There's no separation, really.
Yeah.
He was talking to me about the shit that they would be saying to you guys. Oh, man. But again, that was one of my great thrills, just to be in the stadium and just to be in that locker room. And just to, again, you know, it's lacrosse, you know.
Play like a champion, the whole thing. Listen,
right.
Man.
Yeah.
And I took a recruiting visit there, so I got an idea. And I, listen, it was the, of all the recruiting visits, and I grew up a Trojan fan, but it was, and I loved Notre Dame football because it was on our TV every friggin' week growing up, right? Is the first time you walk on that. Now, the Coliseum's historic. Walking down that tunnel at the Coliseum,
oh boy,
something else. Two old school stadiums, for one big, the other one really cozy. And I'm going to tell you now that, and this is no disrespect to my alma mater, but the chills that you get walking on a Notre Dame's field for the first time.
Can't even imagine.
Every time thereafter. It's as good as the being at home in the Coliseum when Notre Dame came to us. That is the best. And they both come out and stare at each other and walk down a tunnel. It is, that was the most moving for me. The most moving grass. They're on top of you. Touchdown Jesus, the Golden Dome. The day before going to the book sports store after walkthrough. Eerie is not the right word. You feel every ounce of history if you love it. College. And then we were blessed one time that John McKay came in. And I don't know if I ever told you this. McKay came in. We didn't know. Ted Tolner brought him in as guest speaker. So he stands up there and he said, no matter, and I paraphrase, but most of it's spot on. He said, no matter where you play, no matter what game you play in your career, Rose Bowl, rival, NFL, you will never remember a game more than right here.
How about that?
We're in a locker room at Notre Dame. And you're like,
wow,
this is John McKay. This is Coach McKay, right? And I could, the day before that game, one of my best friends on the team, we got in a fight, a fist fight. It came to blows. Nobody hit a blow, but trying to wrestle to the ground. Because the intensity and the feeling of we're in South Bend hit us both. To this day, we still laugh about it. He was a defensive strong safety, and I'm a quarterback. And we just, you know, for what, I don't even know why. Oh, get out. I'm trying to shower you. And it came to a head, the pressure, right?
It wasn't Colette, was it?
No. It wasn't great. No, it was Troy West, who I love to this day. Now, Troy was a stud and a knock-your-dick-in-the-dirt strong safety, right?
Right.
At that point in time, you lose your mind. You're ready to fight anybody, right? And we go, and we still laugh at, like, I don't even know why we were fighting, but I do know why. You may have rubbed shoulders on your way and because of the intensity of this shit, right? And Troy, we laugh, and he was a great teammate.
That's a great story.
I love him, but it was
– oh, it's amazing.
Intense, but that is the best – and I'm sure no matter who you play, but – we played UCLA every year, and it's a great rivalry. And the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum, walking down onto Notre Dame's field, it's the most historic program in any college sport. Now, I know that there's hockey and the Frozen.
Yeah, of course.
Notre Dame's most historic football program.
Number one.
And sports program, period.
Number one.
And if you hate Notre Dame, you need to go watch a game there.
Absolutely.
It's
a bucket
Notre
list.
Dame. It is. And it was. It was friggin' phenomenal, and Mike Lamb's right, and they are right on you, brother.
Yeah, no, he's right.
And at the back of the end zone, there's people. I mean, it's like a golfer hitting a shot with a guy leaning into his driver, right? You got to hit it straight, or you kill the guy, and they are on you. All right, my question for you is, you asked me it. You have just as much vested interest as I do. What would you do if you were the commissioner of NCAA football? How are you fixing name, image, and likeness, or would you?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I would. I'll tell you why I would. I see this being a major problem for college sports. We're still in the infancy of name, image, and likeness. And I see all the problems that this is going to cause. I don't have an answer to your question because I haven't really thought about what I would do. But I would do something. I think we're on a very dangerous path for the future of, we'll just keep it to college football for right now. I don't like where we're heading on with this. So I think there needs to be some revisions. There needs to be some tightening of some of the things. And you hit on a couple of them, whether it's salary cap or whatever, but I don't like where this is heading. I think this is not going to be good going down the road if they don't make some major adjustments.
Grant, what if the freshman, like the highest recruited quarterback in the country, is getting recruited and name it? Because, you know, you're making decisions based on not where you want to go, but not all of them, but who's offering you the best name? That those decisions will be made. And the more the money grows, the more the people are going to make decisions based on, like a pro does when he leaves free agency. I'm going where the most money is. I'll play good football anywhere, right? That'll come into play. But what happens if it is high school? There's a sophomore running back there, and he's you look at the team and say, well, not only do you got to recruit him, or a right tackle or a left tackle that you want to come to the same school. I'm name, image, and likeness. I'm coming to your school, but here's the deal. That 16-year-old sophomore at my high school in Texas, I want you to give him $250,000 right now. Wow. Because his family, and he's the best left tackle in high school football. Yep. He's a 5-star recruit at 16, but you want to sew him up, and the player says, I'm not coming here unless you bring my buddy who's been my childhood best friend.
Oh,
and
boy.
You just gave him at 16, and that name him, and it's a car dealership. I'd also like you to get him his new car at 16. Now, it's great for the kid, but is it great for football?
No.
And don't
no,
think
it's
not going to happen. Of course it is. Yeah. Why wouldn't it? You're the best high school player in the country as a sophomore. Aren't you looking around saying, what you got? I mean, why, especially if you come from a family. I come from I would have loved to.
Yeah, I don't know if it's good for the kid. You said it's good for the kid. I'm not even sold on that.
Financially.
Yeah, I understand. But, you know, you also, we know the other problems that this is going to cause for some young people that don't have the discipline, don't have the leadership around them. You know, this whole thing could be an absolute mess. But, hey, here's the deal. I got to get going because I got to do another show in 5 minutes. But I love this show today. This was great stuff, man. This was awesome.
You're awesome, and I appreciate you. Do I say go Yankees because of red? You want me to say that before we leave?
No, I wouldn't make you do that. But thank you. I have it now. It's recorded. The go Yankees part, I'm going to edit and I'm going to put out there for everybody to hear Sean Salisbury say go Yankees. So I appreciate that.
It was, and you know what? It was a joke. But hey, run with that. There you go.
You're the best, buddy.
I love you, man. Thank you.
Love
go
you
red
too.
Sox. Thanks, man.
Oh, my God.
It.